Good afternoon. Well, that wasn't as enthusiastic as the morning, so I'll say it again. Good afternoon. Much better, thanks. So today, if you haven't already worked out, we are talking about family. So I thought I'd start off with showing you a picture or two pictures of my family. At some point. There we go. So there's a picture. I was about 13, 14 in this picture, and we are on a family holiday in Cornwall, and that's the Camel Trail near Padstow. And the next photo, just a few years later, we went back and did a kind of family reunion for my dad's 60th. These are both really happy family memories. The family's got a little bit larger. There's two husbands. Only one of them are mine. I've got a nephew there in that picture. We've obviously had Ivy. If you looked really closely, Ivy's really not happy about this bike ride. Actually, I didn't really enjoy that bike ride. I'm not a cyclist. But the whole holiday, great memory. I have lots of happy memories of my family. I have some sad ones and possibly some bad ones. But the majority of my childhood, very happy, lots of happy memories. And today, this passage is a little glimpse, a little snapshot like this, of Jesus's family, and they're quite rare in the Bible. So this passage today is a little snapshot of Jesus's physical family. So the passage tells us that Jesus is talking to a large crowd, giving the best sermon, the best preach he ever has, and his mother and his brother and possibly his sisters turn up outside and they want to talk to him. And the fact that his family have turned up and want to talk to him is not unusual. I try and talk to my family fairly regularly. John talks to his mum multiple times a day. That's possibly unusual, but yes. Jesus' family have turned up to see him. But in this case, they haven't turned up to have a quick catch-up. They haven't turned up to cheer him on. They've actually turned up because they're a bit fed up of him. They're a bit embarrassed. This is the guy they grew up with, and he's now roaming the country talking about his heavenly father, and they're embarrassed. So they've turned up to take charge and to take him home. So they send someone in to get Jesus. Possibly someone's drawn the short straw, and they send that one in to get Jesus and to pull him out of the crowd. He says, "Jesus, your family are outside." But Jesus doesn't come out to them. He actually stops and he turns to them and the whole crowd and challenges them about who his true family are. He says, "For whoever does the will of my Father in heaven is my brother and sister and mother." In Mark 3, another book in the Bible, we have the same passage. It tells us the same story. And the message, a different version of the Bible, reads, "Looking around, taking in everybody seated around him, he said, 'Right here in front of me, these are my mothers, my brothers. The person who obeys God's will is my family.' These guys are, not the guys outside." And at this point of Jesus' life, his brothers didn't believe in him. They didn't believe the message that Jesus was giving. Later on, in fact, just a few weeks later, they do a complete U-turn and they do believe Jesus. And they later on become key members of the early church and go around doing exactly what Jesus is doing in our passage, talking to large crowds. But at this point, they think he's crazy. They've turned up to shut him up and to take him home. And I do feel a little bit sorry for Jesus' family at this point. I read one commentary that says, "What a privilege to have been part of Jesus' physical family." And yes, I get that. In worship, we long to see Jesus and to feel God. So growing up in his family and seeing him physically, what an amazing opportunity that was. But also, can you imagine in Jesus' family growing up with a brother who was perfect, didn't get anything wrong, so always said please and thank you, always wrote his Christmas card thank you letters, never started his meals without saying a little prayer of thanks first. Can you imagine how irritating that was? So of course it would have been hard for his brothers and his family to believe in him. They grew up with him. They ate their meals with him. And now he's roaming the country telling people he's the Son of God. So I feel like we should possibly cut Jesus' family some slack. But in our passage, Jesus says, he says to the crowd that his physical family, the guys outside, the woman who gave birth to him, the brothers and sisters who grew up with him, they aren't his true family. His true family are his spiritual one. "For whoever does the will of my Father in heaven is my family." And if they were all Jesus' family, and I'm part of Jesus' family, and you're part of Jesus' family, and you're part of Jesus' family, that makes us family. The guys in the photo, as lovely as some of them are, they're not my only family. The church is. We are a family. A family full of different ages, different abilities, different races, different personalities, different anxieties, different everythings. We're a group of people aiming to do the will of God together. And that makes us family. This is pretty much the only point of my sermon. I could sit down now. I'm not going to. I'm going to drag it out and milk it out as far as I can. But if you are going to fall asleep, that's the main point. You can actually fall asleep. Because the main point, the only point of today's sermon is we are a family. But so what? What does that actually mean? What difference does it make that we are a family? What does that look like? And specifically, what does it look like here at St. James or in your church? What does it look like to live as a family? Starting next week, if you are listening to video news, you will have heard it. We're launching a new sermon series, and it's based on the kingdom of God. We'll be looking at the book of Matthew in quite a lot of depth and looking at what it says about the kingdom of God. I don't want to give away too many spoilers for the up-and-coming sermons, but it's quite helpful to have a quick look at it because it helps us look at what family's like. If we live in a kingdom where we believe Jesus is king, what does that mean and how should that reflect our Christian lives if we live under this lordship and kingship of Jesus? Over the next few weeks, this is going to be unpacked and probably much better than I'm going to explain it, but it's complex. So I'm going to try and explain it a little bit now, but if you don't get it, it's fine because they're going to explain it again in a few weeks. So the kingdom is present. It is now. We are living in it, but it's also not yet here. It's still coming, and it will be completed in its fullness in the future. God's kingdom is now, but it is still yet to come. See, I told you it was complicated. So if we're a group of people living under this lordship of Jesus, doing the will of God together, we are living in his kingdom. And this means we get little glimpses of the fullness of the kingdom that is yet to come. The church, living as a family, is a glimpse of the fullness of heaven. And that's life-changing. It changes who we are, it changes how we interact with one another, and it changes how we do life together. A very close friend of mine, I met her on the first day of uni in Halls, and we've been very close ever since. It was only a few years ago that I was at uni, just a few. And she tries really, really hard to understand the people that she meets. Friendship's really important to her, and she wants to understand the people. And for me, we get on really well, but she doesn't have a faith, so she tries really hard to understand my faith. And she asks lots and lots of questions. It's great. She does all the evangelism for me. I don't have to do anything. Just have to answer her questions. And some of my answers have been spectacular. Trust me. But I don't think they've made much of a difference. But what has made a difference, what has stood out to this friend of mine, is the church families that I've been part of. That not only at university did I have friends like her at Halls, I had friends from my course, I had a church family, a family that looked out for me, a family that fed me, and a family that cared for me, all of different ages, different abilities, different races, different backgrounds. And the reason that stood out to her, the reason that was so appealing, was that she was getting a glimpse of what's to come. The church family is a glimpse of the fullness of God's kingdom. What a privilege that we get to be part of that. What a gift, but also what a challenge. A challenge because we are showing the kingdom off to the rest of the world. Church is at its best when we do life together as a family. However, it isn't always easy. We don't always get it right. And as a church, as a leadership, as members of the congregation, we have to continually work at this. Because we don't just want to be a family, we want to be a really healthy family. And to be a healthy family, we have to do a few things. The first thing is we have to see each other regularly. We have to make church a priority. We all have busy lives. We all go away for the weekend. We all do slightly too much on a Saturday night, so can't get up on Sunday. And if it was really heavy, can't get up even to get here for Sunday afternoon. And no one is registering your attendance. No, well, Brian does count how many people are here, but he's not got your name next to the list of numbers. Nobody's registering if you're here or not, but we do have to make church a priority. We need to make seeing each other and being in God's presence a priority. We also have to accept each other. We're all different ages, different abilities, different personalities. And we're all part of the church, and we're all needed parts of the church. 1 Corinthians 12 tells us that there's one body, but with many parts. And no one part is more important than the other. The foot can't say to the hand, I don't need you. We need both parts. And at St. James, we have something called student mentoring. It's based on the principle that slightly older people are wiser. This is not the case with all older people, but some of them are wiser. And so we use those people as mentors, and we ask them to teach some of the younger generation about life. And our children, we can learn so much from them, their joy, the chaos, their eagerness to learn. We're all different, and we're all part of this family, and we all have to learn to accept each other. We also need to help each other. We need to look out for those that are struggling. And when we find that member struggling, we have to help them. We need to make meals for those that are sick. We need to feed each other's cats. We need to babysit for one another. And we need to help each other move house. This is just a list of how you can help John and I in the next few weeks. But there'll be other people that need help. And there'll be other people that need you to help them do things. There'll be a long list of ways you can help other members of the family. Because that's what family does. It helps each other. We also need to trust each other. We need to trust that all the other members want you here. And to do that, we have to let go of some of our anxieties. If we're doing life together, however noisy your child is, however grumpy or tired you are, however useless or out of place you feel, we are a family. And by anxieties, I'm not talking about medical conditions or real fears. I'm talking about that little voice inside all of us that tells us we're worthless. And sometimes that little voice is really loud for some of us. And that little voice that tells you you're worthless is a complete lie. You are a loved and a precious child of God. And that makes you a precious and loved part of the church and of St. James's family. And you're a really important part of it. So we have to trust God and the rest of the church family that they want you here. And they want you here in whatever state you're turning up in. We also have to be honest with each other. When someone asks you how you are, don't say you're fine if you're not fine. I remember in my church growing up, there was lots of old women, and for some reason, old women, when you ask them how they are, they have a long list of medical things that are wrong with them. Their hips, the colds affecting their bones, all sorts of stuff. And when you ask that these people growing up, you'd get a 20 to 40 minute lecture on all the medical things that were wrong with them. So if I ask you how you are, I don't want that. If you've got medical things, find somebody else in the family to talk to about. But I do want you to be honest with me. I want you to tell me if you're not fine. And we'll start from there. We'll pray together and we'll find someone, if it's medical, to deal with it. But I want you to be honest. We need to be honest as a family together. We also have to see each other through an eternal lens. If we look back at our passage, Jesus said his family were those doing the Father's will, not those that have got it all right, or those that just believe in the Father, or those that are perfect, those doing his will. It's an action. It's a continuous action of us striving to do God's will and to become more Christ-like. Because just like the kingdom is not fully here, we're not fully Christ-like, which means we get it wrong. Which means we get it wrong, we mess up. And you know what? sometimes you just don't get on with people. And I'm obviously not talking about you guys. I'm talking about the people in the morning service. Because you guys are obviously my favourite. But it's true, isn't it? Sometimes you do just clash with people. And it's then that you have to look at everybody through an eternal lens. You need to see them how God sees them. See them as the finished product, not as the work in progress that we all are. And because we're work in progresses, we have to forgive each other. And we have to be quick to forgive each other when we do things wrong and when we mess up. That's hard. When a church member lets you down, or perhaps in another church, a whole leadership team or a whole church has let you down. And that's painful. And it takes lots of time and lots of prayer and lots of healing. And we often tend to, even though we've said we've forgiven, we tend to carry those pains with us. And the only thing we can do at that point is to lay it at the cross and to give those hurts to Jesus and ask for healing. At St. James, we have five values. They were in our song this morning. Love, live, grow, serve, build. And the live value is just this. It's about living together as a family. It's about doing life together. One way we do that at St. James is we have food together. So in the morning, there's croissants and pizza's back today after a long break. Whoop. So we eat together at our services. And that's why at the staycation, all we did was eat all weekend. We go away together. So we had the staycation. A few families went away last weekend. The students go away every year. And this academic year in March, we go away as a full family to Quinta. Because on a weekend, you do life together and it happens quicker. If you just come on a Sunday and you arrive at 4:05 and you take part in the full service, but you leave possibly during the last hymn, and that's great. We love that you're here, but you're not getting the full glimpse of the kingdom of heaven. You're not fully participating in the St. James family. Another way to be part of the family is to do midweek groups. And if you haven't noticed, I'm an extrovert. I love big crowds. The noisier, the crazier, the better. But not everybody's like that. And for you, midweek groups are perfect because they're smaller, there's less people to get annoyed by and stressed by, and you can get to know them easier. So then when you come to the large groups on a Sunday, it feels like home and it feels like family because you have new people that you know. And at the start of this academic year, we are relaunching and refocusing our midweek groups. I told you there was five values at St. James, but there's actually six. And the sixth one is that we love a good handout. So we've actually got a handout. Padfields, if you're willing, you could hand them out. So this handout goes through all the different midweek groups we have. Because we want everybody at St. James to be part of a midweek group. So there's different ones. There's Nourish if you've got small children, the student groups on a Monday, there's English Corner for international students, there's Alpha if you have questions and you want to learn more about the Christian faith, there's Growing Disciples, that's the newly named newcomers group, and this one is great, like Ed said in video news, if you're not in a midweek group, this is the one for you, because it's a short 4-week course, you'll learn about all the other groups, and you can work out which one is right for you. There's God at Work, there's Peace and Justice, and there's a brand new purpose group called 528. We started this link group, because we realised that lots of families weren't able to attend a midweek group because the timings, the traditional evening 7:30 timings, wasn't working for them. So this runs from 5 to 8, not 7:55, but 5 till 8. Every week, different times in the week, so talk to Jude or I if you want to join in, be on the mailing list. And we eat together, there's content for children, there's content for adults, and it's not just for families, but it works well and it's designed to work well timing-wise for families. And the reason we started a new group is that midweek groups are an important part of being part of the St. James family and being a real member and becoming a real member really quickly. So if you're not in a midweek group, why not? Come and talk to the key leaders that are on this lovely handout. And if none of those fit, have a think and a pray about what will fit, and go and talk to Jude and Ed and we can design a new one. Jesus told the crowd that day that his true family wasn't his mother, his brothers, or his sisters, but his true family was his spiritual one, those that were doing the will of God. And what a privilege that we get to be part of that family. But to be a healthy one, we have to be working at it. We have to continually be striving to do the will of God. We have to forgive easily. We have to be loving and welcoming and to do life together, even in those times when it's not easy. Romans 12, verse 15 tells us that we can cry with those that are crying and rejoice with those that are rejoicing. That's doing life together. We get to rejoice with people, but we also get to weep with people. We have to open our homes. We have to invite people in. And maybe we have to let go of some of our anxieties and some of the past hurts that we're carrying and trust that God will heal you. Because we don't just want to be a family. We want to be a really healthy one, showing the whole of Toxteth, the whole of Liverpool and the world, the fullness of God's kingdom. The band are going to come up. And Hannah. We are doing life together because Jesus told us we're a family. And I love that. I love that I get to be part of your family. But we need to work really hard to be a healthy one and to make everyone, every new person that walks in, feel part of this family. And especially at the start of this academic year when new people are coming all the time. Jesus has called us to be a family, and that's exciting. Amen.
That's great. Thanks, Kirsty. We're going to sing together in a moment, but always at the end of St. James, there's always time for prayer. And we would just really encourage you, if there's anything at all you would like prayer for,